Okay, thank you very much, Mitchell Narayan, Lisa Shakti, and as Brody's mentioned, we'd like to dedicate this evening's class to Anil Gore, who is a great devotee and good friend, great supporter, and very dear to Krishna, and passed away, we're feeling his loss, passed away early this morning. So this evening's program, we're having a regular marriage, the two nice devotees, and then also it's Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha. So this evening we're going to talk about Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha, and maybe touch upon regular marriages too, if we have enough time. Jaya Radha Madhava Kundavi
Bye.
Paramahansa Paravidikacharya also Teta Satishi Shima. His Divine Grace Savaya Chanana Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kijai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrindi Kijai Navacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijai. Rem Se Goho Shri Krishna Chaitanya. Rabu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadad Ha Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Gunda Gajaya Shishi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopata Sayam Kun Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Gajaya Vrindavanam Gajaya Vajranam Gajaya Navadeep Dham Gajaya Jagadha Sami Gajaya Yamunamai Gajaya Shimani Gulasi Devi Gajaya Sivaveda Bhakta Vrindavanam Gaur Parimananda Haniya. All glories he assembled the devotees. All glories he assembled the devotees. All glories he assembled the devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Prabhupada. Okay, so Maganati Minanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Medikam Yenatas Mai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, what is the purpose of marriage? The purpose of marriage is that two people can make promises to each other, which in a advanced society like Vedic society, promises are meant to be kept. And in a society like the modern Western society, promises are made to be broken. Right? When I was young, when we would make a promise, we would cross our fingers. I don't know if anyone ever did that. That means you didn't have to keep your promise. But it's very important in all sorts of human relationships, not only marriage, but friendship, or any sort of parental relationship, to have an understanding of being fixed in that particular relationship and actually taking a vow. So a marriage is a vow or a promise to remain fixed in that relationship, to help the other person and in Krishna consciousness. It means to help the other person advance spiritually, not use the other person for one's own happiness or what we would call sense gratification. So that's the purpose of marriage. But interestingly enough, even God gets married. That may come as a surprise to all of you, because why does God have to get married? He already owns everything. And in Vrindavan, you don't usually see him getting married. Although there's some secret marriages between Krishna and Radharani. So there are marriages. So God gets married for a variety of purposes. One purpose, of course, is to teach us a lesson. As Krishna says in the Gita, yad yad achareti shreshtas tatat evetaro janaha, that I act in such a way to teach others how to act. So you see, Krishna was very responsible when he got married in Dwarka. He got married 16,108 times, and I don't advise any of you to do that. Unless you can divide yourself up and be in 16,108 houses simultaneously, unless you can pay the bills in 16,108 houses, unless you can pay the mortgages in 16,108 houses, unless you can talk to your wife all day long in 16,108 houses. So, don't do it. But because Krishna is God, he can do that. And Krishna is teaching us how to be responsible. Krishna was extremely responsible in his married life. And then, that's not the only reason. Krishna also gets married because he enjoys rasa, or he enjoys relationships. People sometimes think that Hinduism means that when you become liberated, what's called moksha, then you give up all relationships, you become one, you merge into God, which is kind of horrible. I mean, who wants to merge into Krishna? Who wants to be Krishna? Anyone here? No. Of course, you're all afraid to say you are. But who wants to do those things? We want to love Krishna. And Krishna wants to love us, and that's the spiritual world. And part of loving relationships are marriages, friendships, parental relationships, servitude. All these things are part of loving relationships. And Krishna, when he engages in these loving relationships, he doesn't engage in a very stereotypical way, like your typical husband who behaves himself. But Krishna doesn't always act in a way that we would expect, because he's God. And he does this to attract our attention. So I'm going to tell the story about one time when Krishna got married, how he did this to attract our attention. And this is, of course, the Tulsi story. Once upon a time, many eons ago, of course, let's just explain a little bit about Tulsi. Many of you know about Tulsi Devi. Tulsi Devi is a plant, and she has leaves as a plant. And every time we offer to Krishna, we have to put a Tulsi leaf on. If we don't put a Tulsi leaf on, Krishna throws the plate away. He says, I'm not going to eat it. That's shocking, isn't it? And one Tulsi leaf, Krishna even talks about Tulsi leaves in the Gita. What does he say? Anyone know that verse? Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktu prayachyati. The one can offer me, with love and devotion, a leaf, fruit, little water. And that leaf is Tulsi Devi that Krishna is referring to. So Tulsi Devi is essential. And even if you can't offer anything else to Krishna, you just offer one leaf, that's sufficient. There's this interesting story in Govardhan. When Krishna assumed the gigantic form of Giriraj, Govardhan, and there was this Anakut ceremony, and they were offering Krishna all these different varieties of foodstuffs, mountains of rice, mountains of rotis, mountains of pizza. I put that in to see if you were listening. Just wanted to see if everybody was aware. You know. No, they didn't offer pizza. So, mountains of different types of foodstuffs. And then Krishna ate it all. And what did he say? Aniyor. He said, Aniyor, give me more, give me more. They said, there is no more. And then they were afraid of Krishna because he was still hungry. And we know what happens. Sometimes Krishna in the universal form is even eating the whole universe. The Bhagavad Gita, we can read about that. So, One intelligent devotee had the idea to offer Krishna a Tulsi leaf, and then he said, okay, I'm satisfied. Just one little Tulsi leaf. So we're going to talk about how Tulsi, who was actually the wife of Krishna, and we mentioned Krishna has many wives, is very important in worshipping Krishna. So what is the whole story? And Krishna does things such an interesting way. It's not that Krishna just walked up to a Tulsi plant and said, hey, you're dear to me, let's get married. That would have been quite a boring story, isn't it? When Krishna does things, he's anything but boring. Who wants God who's boring? Who simply sits on a seat all day long, judging people, you're naughty, you're nice, go to hell. It's not a very interesting person, is it? We want to worship a God who's just like plays a flute, jokes around with his friends, steals butter, feeds it to monkeys. I mean, that's such an interesting person. Therefore, Krishna consciousness. I remember before I came to Krishna consciousness in 1969, I read about Krishna in this book, the Krishna book from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's book. And as soon as I read about a little boy, little blue boy, stealing butter and feeding it to the monkeys, I just couldn't get that idea out of my mind. I thought I was going crazy. Because he's so attractive. That's the name, Krishna. He's the most attractive person. He attracts you and negates the material energy. Krishna. You understand? Na means the negation of the material, or na maya, the material energy. So here's the story. That was a brief introduction. Once upon a time, Krishna was in the spiritual world. Of course, Krishna's always in the spiritual world. And Krishna had a relationship He flirted, as they say. I don't know if any of you know what flirting means. Flirting means like what you see in a Bollywood movie sometimes. When there's a young man, Akshay Kumar, I met him in Game of Gator. But anyway, and he looks at a young girl and he makes eyes and the girl makes... Anyway, so Krishna... I think you all understand what that is. Yeah. So Krishna did that with a girl named Viraj. And Radharani, who is Krishna's topmost consort, the Ladini of pleasure potency of Krishna, got very upset. It's called jealous. You know what jealous is? No. Jealous means you're angry because someone else has something that you wish you had. That's jealousy. And the material world, jealousy is bad. You know, if I see someone with a better computer than me, I get very angry. Or a better car. Or a newer car. I get angry. So that's jealousy. Envy. We call that envy. So in the spiritual world, there's envy also, but that's very pleasurable. Krishna likes envy in the spiritual world because it helps bring out different rasas. We talked about this last night, those of you who were at my program, how there's these indirect rasas like anger and things like that. And so Krishna enjoys it, you know, because it's very dramatic. As I said, Krishna doesn't like boring things. So Radharani gets angry and curses Viraj. He gets angry at Krishna. And so what happens is that Viraj, she becomes a river, the Viraja River. And actually, Radharani later forgives her. At the same time, one of Krishna's coward boyfriends, Sudam, because Krishna has friends in the spiritual world, gets angry at Radharani. And Krishna just tolerates it. Krishna generally tolerates when Radharani chastises him. He's a good boyfriend. All you husbands should learn from Krishna. So Krishna tolerates, but Radharani is still chastising Krishna and Sudam. He gets angry at Radharani. And Radharani gets angry at him and she says, curses him, you're acting improperly. I'm the queen of Vrindavan. You should go to the material world. You don't belong here. So he starts crying. And Radharani says, okay, you don't have to go. And then Krishna says, no, I want him to go. I have a pastime. Send him down there. It'll just be a very short time. And then he can come right back. Because the time in the material world is different than the time in the spiritual world. Like you have 1/10 of an instant in the spiritual world is 10 quadrillion years in the material world. So let's say we spend millions of lifetimes in this world and we're gone from the spiritual world only for half of an instant. Pretty good, isn't it? And we wake up in the spiritual world, we think, I just had a bad dream. I was here on the earth and so-and-so got elected. Oh, sorry. So, so just had a bad dream. And then you wake up in the spiritual world. So he goes down to the material world. And he takes birth as someone named Shankachuda. And Shankachuda is actually quite interesting because he is the son of Damba, who is the son of Viprachiti, who later on became Jarasandha in Krishna's pastimes. It's interesting. All these demons are very much connected. But he was actually a devotee. Mm. So, and the demigods were very worried. At the same time, you have Tulsi coming down to the material world. This whole story is told by Narada Muni in the Padma Purana, one of the great Puranas. So Tulsi, of course, is a personal expansion of Srimati Radharani. Mm. And so she became intimate with Krishna one time in the spiritual world. And Radharani got angry with her and cursed her to come to the material world. So try to understand, Radharani's anger is actually compassion at the same time. It's actually carrying out Krishna's desires. Sometimes Radharani gets so angry with Krishna that she doesn't want to see Krishna, and then she establishes her friends to hold sticks, like Lalita, to keep Krishna away. And then Krishna has to dress up as a lady to go to see Radharani. Or he has to dress up as a sannyasi to read Radharani's hand and later on get in to see Radharani. So this happens. So Tulsi in the spiritual world was cursed to come down in the material world, and therefore she took birth as the daughter of Dharmadvaja and Madhavi, the two great devotees, who actually performed austerities and worshipped Lakshmi, and they performed austerities for 100 celestial years, which is like millions of years on the earth planet. And Tulsi was born with such beautiful features. She had lotus flower on imprint on the toes, beautiful smile, her palms were red, her navel was deep, all these different signs of a great personality. And she never aged being more than 16. 16 is the best age to be. After that, it's all downhill. Believe me. And the reason she was called Tulsi, does anyone know what Tulsi means? Incomparable. That means someone who is matchless. There is no one to compare with Tulsi Devi. So Tulsi, she basically, after she's born, she's 16 years old, never gets older, she goes to Bhadri Kashram to get Narayan as her husband, because she's a great devotee. So she's doing austerities for 100,000 celestial years there. For 20,000 years, she just eats fruits and water. Anyone here just did the Bhishma Panchika? You just ate fruits and waters for 20,000 years. Oh, one day. I know, I'm sorry. And then the next 30,000 years, she just ate dried leaves. 40,000 years, she just breathed. And for 10,000 years, she didn't breathe. That's austerity. And she stood on one leg to get Krishna as her husband. Brahma appears to her, and he says, instead of Krishna, I want you to marry Shankachuda, this demon who I previously said was Sudama. Actually, previously in the spiritual world, there was some attraction between the two of them. So Shankachuda is Sudama, Krishna's coward boyfriend, and so Tulsi is Krishna's consort in the spiritual world. So he says, Brahma, Lord Brahma says, that you are both Jati Smarana. That means you can both remember your past lives in the spiritual world. So she remembers that I was Tulsi in the spiritual world, got cursed by Radharani, and he remembers that I was Sudama in the spiritual world, and I got cursed by Radharani. So you're going to get married. She's not exactly that enthusiastic about it, because she wants to marry Narayan. And so she asks Brahma for a boon at this point. She's not yet thinking she's going to marry Shankachuda, even though Lord Brahma said she was going to marry Shankachuda. She asked for Boon to chant a mantra to Radharani so that she would not be afraid of her anymore, and Radharani would actually be nice to her, because she was afraid of Radharani, because Radharani had cursed her. So she was initiated into the 16-letter Radha mantra, which she chanted. And she worshipped Radha for 12 years. And while she was worshipping Radha for 12 years, Lord Brahma's prediction came true that Kamadev attacked her. Does anyone know who Kamadev is? It's Cupid. It's like in February you have a special holiday to Kamadev. Right? What is it called?
Valentine's Day.
It's Kamadev's Day. So you have this holiday, and you know, we all celebrate, give chocolate. Right? Do you celebrate? To Krishna, we give chocolate to Krishna.
My son, he makes hearts.
The hearts for the babies. That's good. So, anyway, it's a Western equivalent of Kachiyani Vrat. So, Valentine, so Cupid exists, and he's called Ananga. Ananga means he's invisible, doesn't have any limbs, because he was burnt by Lord Shiva. And so he sneaks up on you and fires his arrows, and before you know it, you're crazy. You're mad, madly in love, and you forget about everything, and your life is lost. If you're not Krishna conscious. Anyway, that's it. That's what, That's why traditionally in the Vedic system, most of the marriages were arranged, because many of the love marriages didn't work out properly because people fell in love with the wrong person. It happens often sometimes. Because love is blind, as they say. Anyway, this is a sannyasi story. So she was struck by Kamadev, and she started to dream about Shankachuda. Oh, where is my Shankachuda? Oh, where can he be? When am I going to meet Shankachuda? Oh, my heart is given to Shankachuda. True story. This happens when you're in love. You'll all experience that later. So, in the meantime, Shankachuda was performing austerities to get Tulsi as his wife. And Lord Brahma appeared to Shankachuda, same time this was happening. And Shankachuda asked to become invincible to the demigods. In other words, not be able to be defeated by the demigods. And he asked also to marry Tulsi. So Lord Brahma gave him this amulet. Amulet means something you put on your arm. That he could not be killed as long as he wore this amulet. And he could not be killed as long as his wife Tulsi was chaste to him. So he thought, no one could kill me, therefore. So then he went and he met Tulsi. Tulsi was still at Badrika Ashram at this particular point. And Tulsi tests him. She says, why do you want to get married to me? You know, how can you trust me? I'm just in the mode of passion. Of course, she wasn't in the mode of passion. And Shankachuda actually understood that Shankachuda is a demon at this point. That she was actually in the mode of goodness. And Brahma appeared at this point and said, let's have the marriage. And that particular marriage was a Gandharva marriage, which is quite easier than the marriage you'll see today. Gandharva marriages, you say, will you marry me? Okay. And they exchange garlands, and that's it. No expense, no feast, no guests. Really simple and easy. There's another simple and easy marriage, too. It's called the Rakshasa marriage. That's even easier, where the man kidnaps the woman, or the woman kidnaps the man. Krishna did that. Did you know that? Krishna kidnapped Rukmini. Arjuna kidnapped Subhadra. And actually, Subhadra kidnapped Arjuna, because she was driving the chariot. So, this is all right. We should institute these marriages and save money and time. So, anyway, so they had this Gandharva marriage, and Lord Brahma presided over the Gandharva marriage, and the couple enjoyed for 4,300,000 years. In the meantime, Shankachuda, because he had this invincibility, got control of all the heavenly planets. Nobody could defeat Shankachuda. And Tulsi was so chaste him at this time. So all the demigods, that's the lower gods, or the ones who associate or help God, God's cabinet, you know, like the president has a cabinet, they all went to Brahma, and Brahma went to Vishnu. This is what usually happens. If there's a complaint in the universe, you go to Brahma first, Brahma goes to Vishnu, and Vishnu says, I'll take care of it. And Lord Narayan explains everything, and he says to Lord Shiva, I'm going to give you a trident to kill this demon. But first of all, we have to take care of this amulet, and we have to take care of Tulsi's chastity. So I am going to appear as a brahmana and beg the amulet from Shankachuda. So Lord Vishnu appears like that. In the meantime, the fighting is going on before Tulsi's chastity is violated. Shiva attacks him with Kartikeya, the Vasus, and all the other demigods, and Shankachuda goes to fight. Tulsi gets very nervous at this point because she knows her husband's ultimate demise is going to happen. And he tells her, don't worry, in the future we're going to both be back with Radha and Krishna. So what's the problem if we die? But she's pretty emotional about the whole thing, like the ladies are. So Shankachuda goes with 300,000 Akshahini forces to fight the demigods. That's a lot. Not just 300,000 soldiers, it's 300,000 Akshahinis, which is like whole armies. And He goes to fight Lord Shiva first. Then he fights with Kali. Nobody can defeat him. Kali throws her weapons, but all of them fail. And she gets her trident ready, and then she hears a voice from the sky. And the sky says, you're not supposed to kill him until Tulsi's chastity is violated. And a similar thing happens with Shankachuda, with Shiva too. The heavenly voice tells Lord Shiva just to calm down, just take your time. So then Krishna, or Lord Narayan, after he takes his amulet away, he takes the form of Shankachuda and goes to see Tulsi, and he has the same amulet. That way Tulsi thinks it's my husband or her husband. And they enjoy in this way, and then her chastity is violated. Then Lord Shiva fires his trident and kills Shankachuda, and Shankachuda goes back to home, back to Godhead. And his bones are tossed in the sea, and his bones become conch shells. That's why a conch shell is considered very, very sacred. Normally we don't put bones on the altar. We're not engaged in the left-handed tantra where they eat out of a skull and put bones on the altar. But normally bones are actually very impure. However, the bones of the conch or the conch shell is considered very, very pure. And if the proper person blows the conch, guess what? Lakshmi is present. There are even Lakshmi conches too, which go in the opposite direction. And if the improper person blows the conch, someone who is a malecha, I won't describe what a malecha is, someone who is not properly qualified, Lakshmi runs away. So you have to be careful. If you're going to blow a conch, be qualified, be a devotee of Krishna. Then you get plenty of Lakshmi. There's many ways to have Lakshmi. One of the best ways is never argue with your wife. That may be impractical. Sorry for that suggestion, but Prabhupada said that a husband and wife never argue, Lakshmi is always there. So a more practical one is blowing on a conch shell. So anyway, so his bones are tossed in the sea, and then Sudama regains his original form, that Shankachuda regains his original form, and then joins Radha and Krishna in the spiritual world. And Radha and Krishna are very, very happy to see Sudama back there in the spiritual world. They embrace him and welcome him back. At the same time, Tulsi is very suspicious about this man who apparently was her husband. And she says to him, who are you? And he says, I'm Lord Vishnu. And he assumes his form of Lord Vishnu, and she says, you are heartless. You've done something that she forgets that she's a devotee of Lord Vishnu at that point. You are heartless. You're like a stone. Your heart is like a stone, and I curse you to become a stone. So this is all arranged by Lord Vishnu. And so Lord Vishnu explains about becoming a stone, that he'll become one of the stones in the Gandaki River. There's actually a quote here I wanted to read. It's quite an interesting quote. As for me, this is from the Puranas. By your curse, I shall become a stone and remain close to the bank of the Gandaki River. Millions of Raja Kita worms with their sharp teeth will make convolutions or rings in the stones there. These are called chakras, representing me. These will be known as Shalagram Shilas, or sacred stones. So these Shalagram Shilas, this is another quote from the Puranas, I'd like the Skanda Purana. The Shalagram Shila, when duly worshipped in any place inhabited by any class of people, is able to purify an area with a radius of 24 miles. That area should be considered Vishnu Loka, non-different from the abode of Vishnu. If someone believing in the sanctity of the Shalagram Shila, as per the verdict of the Shastras, breathe their last within that 24-mile radius, he is sure to attain mukti. Pretty good. So, that's the Shalagram Shila. Then, here's a quote from Tulsi. This is actually the quote that Tulsi talks to Lord Vishnu. She said, Lord, you are like a stone, you are merciless, you violated my chastity by deception, And by this means you have killed my husband, O Lord. You are merciless. Yes, your heart is like a stone. Therefore I curse you to become a stone. Those who call you holy are doubtlessly wrong. Your devotee committed no offense, and yet for the sake of others you killed him. Why? And then Narayan explains, this is Narayan's retort, O exalted one, you performed austerities for a long time to get me as your husband. And Shankachuta also performed austerities for a long time to get you as his wife. By that austerity, he fulfilled his wish. It was then necessary for me to fulfill your wish. For this reason, I did what I did. Now leave your earthly body and assume a spiritual body and be married to me like Lakshmi. Your body will become a famous river known as the Gandaki River, a virtuous, pure, and transparent river in the holy land of India. Your hairs will be transformed into holy trees. And since the trees will be born of you, they will be known as Tulasi trees. All the residents of the three worlds will perform worship with the leaves and flowers of this tree. Thus you, Tulsi, will reign as the best among trees and flowers. So this is the origin of Tulsi becoming very, very dear to Krishna and being part of our worshipable paraphernalia. In addition, Tulsi serves as Vrindadevi in the spiritual world. Now, Vrindadevi is a very important person. She's Tulsi and also expansion of Srimati Radharani. She arranges, she's like the stage person in a play who arranges all the different paraphernalia, the scenery, the lighting, the sound effects, the colors, everything in the stage. So Vrindadevi arranges everything in Vrindavan for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. The seasons, the animals, associates, everything is arranged by Vrindadevi, and that's Tulsi Devi. So today we should remember Tulsi Devi, worship Tulsi Devi, offer her leaves to Krishna, beg for her mercy to be able to ultimately enter into the spiritual abode of Goloka Vrindavan. That is the goal of Krishna consciousness. Today we're celebrating a marriage. So the goal of that marriage is to become Krishna conscious. The goal of whatever you do, as Krishna said, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, should be done as an offering to me. Yad kuroshi yadashnasi yajohoshi kudasi yad. Yad tapashashi kantiya tat kurishwa madarpanam. So how is a marriage, getting back to this world now, because we were just in the spiritual world, how is a marriage an offering to Krishna? Well, the couple promises to serve each other in Krishna consciousness. To realize that they are servants of each other. Generally, we do things in this world to enjoy someone or something. But it is very seldom that we have the attitude that we're servants. In fact, sometimes in India, if someone gets the appellation in their name, Das, especially in Bengal, that means that, oh, they're servants. But actually, to be a servant, especially a servant, Gopi Bharta Padakamala Dasa 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 Dasa, servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord, who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan, is the most exalted thing. That's why all of us have, those of us who are initiated, have as part of our names, Das, even my name, even though I'm the sannyasi, whatever I am, I am. Vir Krishna Das Goswami. I'm a servant. So we should always remember this, especially in the marriage, that marriage means you serve each other as servants of Krishna. Then you can also approach your parents like that. You serve your parents. I know some of your children may not like this. You serve your parents as servants of Krishna. And then your life is successful. What is the problem with being a servant? Just like I'm sitting up here on the seat and thinking, now I am doing service for all of you to connect you to Krishna. So I'm your servant. One of our great spiritual masters, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, would often remark when someone offered him obeisances, Dasosmi, I am your servant. So if we maintain this attitude, marriage, friendship, children, whatever, then we'll be successful in spiritual life. So thank you very much. I think we should continue with the marriage ceremony. All glories to the divine glory. Okay, so what's next? Vichinarayan Prabhu?